ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
I mean, why didn't they just use Harry Holt's high school nickname, Puss? These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
Search The Dead Can't Sue podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
In Australia, there have been flooding our roads. Relatively cheap Chinese EVs. But you won't find many in America because, yes, they have 100% tariff on them, but they're also banned for security reasons. The latest victim to be kicked out of the US market is Polestar, which is a Swedish-based but Chinese-owned company. Today, cybersecurity expert and former advisor to Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, Alistair McGibbon, on the US ban and why we might be too relaxed about the risks here. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Alistair, Donald Trump and the former president, Joe Biden, they never really saw eye to eye on much. But in one area, they're in furious agreement, and that is the risks of Chinese EVs.
Well, the Biden administration announced a ban on Chinese electric vehicles, particularly the software and the hardware that's inside those vehicles that they saw as a potential surveillance threat and also a broader threat to their national security. And as you said, the Trump administration appears to continue down that line.
Okay, so successive US administrations, first Joe Biden, now Donald Trump, they do believe that the Chinese EVs pose a risk to national security because their operating systems, what, they could send sensitive information to Beijing.
Well, by the nature of the vehicles, they are connected. So unlike a traditional older vehicle that we would have grown up with, where you put petrol in a tank, you put in a key and you drive the vehicle and you're in complete control of it. A modern connected vehicle is by its nature connected. Therefore, the software and the firmware of that vehicle is updated by the manufacturer. And the US actions relate essentially to not where a vehicle is manufactured, but where it is controlled from. Because theoretically, if you are able to update the software continuously, then you can collect information from that same vehicle and you can do other things like change the functionality of the vehicle. And that's where the rub is when it comes to the US policy.
Of course, we saw the car manufacturer Polestar banned from selling any new vehicles in the United States market from next year. Now, that's actually a Swedish brand, but it's majority owned by a Chinese automaker.
Yeah, my understanding is that even the Polestar that's manufactured in the United States, it hasn't got authority to operate. And that goes to the line of controlled by China rather than made in China. In this case, my understanding is some of the vehicles that will be banned are even manufactured in the United States. And it goes to the concept there of the mix of technology inside the vehicles. Mm-hmm. The reality is, again, these vehicles require constant connectivity with the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And the fear is that they can collect information or they could direct the vehicle to behave in a manner that isn't, I guess, in the brochure.
Oh, Okay, all right. Well, Alistair, why don't we turn to the policies here? Because, of course, in Australia, we have not gone down the same path as the United States. In fact, Polestar recorded a near 40% increase in sales in Australia last year. So they're really popular. And we know, of course, that the Chinese-made BYD, you know, is hugely popular here. I mean, you see them all over the place, don't you?
Look, absolutely. There's no doubt they've been an incredible success story and growth area in the car industry. And look, let me just for the record say I understand why Australia hasn't and likely never will take the same path that the US government has. What I would say is Australia needs to consider the safety and security of not just individual drivers and passengers in vehicles, but the overall national security aggregate effect of so many of these vehicles being on Australian roads.
Yeah, and we know that ASIO, our spy agency, it does have concerns, doesn't it? At a Senate estimates hearing in May, the spy agency's Deputy Director General, Lisa Alonso Love, she suggested that MPs and public servants should be very wary of having sensitive conversations in their cars. Now, that's any car, really.
In relation to any vehicle, whether it's connected or not, we would suggest that members of parliament or public servants do not have conversations that contain sensitive or classified information. Obviously, a connected car may have other vectors to gather that information, but those conversations should only ever happen in places that are set up for classified conversations.
Indeed.
And then the opposition demanded a security review into whether Chinese electric vehicles should be used by parliamentarians at all. What did you make of that?
Well, this is complex. Let me give it a crack at keeping it as sort of less verbose than I often can be. Firstly, the advice is right. But what I would say, is it practical? I suspect I talk more in a car than less in a car. They're extraordinarily long road trips that are going to be made by public servants and senior officials if they're not allowed to talk in a Chinese connected vehicle. So it's impractical advice. Let's then look at what other countries have started to do. The British have banned in certain military establishments these Chinese electric vehicles. We know that the Chinese themselves, going back several years, banned Teslas from inside military facilities and in other sensitive parts of their cities. Now, they've, by my understanding, loosened that ban a little bit after some intense lobbying from the world's richest person, but also Tesla committing to keeping data inside China. So other countries have started to ban these things inside establishments. Some are discouraging their public officials from driving in the vehicles. The Israelis, for example, have been phasing out Chinese connected vehicles from their military offices and their intelligence establishment. The Polish have done the same. So other countries are reacting to this. Advice telling people not to connect their telephone. Let's just unpick that for a second. So the driver of the vehicle can't use maps, can't listen to music, can't make telephone calls and shouldn't have a conversation with passengers in the vehicle makes it a particularly unusable vehicle in a modern world.
Yes.
So are officials following the advice that's coming from our domestic intelligence agency or are they ignoring it? If they're ignoring it, then we need to have stronger policies.
Yeah, makes for a long, boring drive in Australia, that's for sure. Now, back in 2024, the opposition's James Patterson, he was making a really big deal of this, the fact that the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, he was driving a Chinese EV and he was quizzing the Labor Senator Murray Watt about that during a Senate estimates hearing.
What mitigations has the Minister taken to protect himself and the Commonwealth from the security risks of driving a Chinese-made EV?
Again, I'll take that on notice, but repeat the point that he has taken the precautions that he was advised to take by his department and security agencies.
Does that include not plugging his phone into the vehicle?
Again, that level of detail I'd need to take on notice.
Does that include not driving the vehicle to any sensitive locations?
I'll take that on notice.
Now, Tony Burke said he'd taken all the necessary precautions. But, you know, ASIO is clearly concerned. But just explain for me a bit more, how would this vehicle actually get its hands, if you like, on sensitive information?
Well, as soon as you connect a telephone to any of these connected vehicles, it doesn't just have a record of the calls you make while inside the car. It is likely to strip out all of your text messages, as many other messages as it can find on the phone, call histories. It'll obviously have locations. The microphones in the vehicle are always on so that you can give directions to the vehicle, give it commands. Then you'd imagine every conversation is sucked down. I won't talk about the Home Affairs Minister in particular, but intelligence agencies that are tasked with protecting Australia should have very legitimate concerns that any cabinet minister, any senior public official, anyone that works in an intelligence agency and on the list should go, ever gets in one of these vehicles, let alone owns one and drives one. And all I can hope is that as an Australian citizen, they're following that advice to the letter. It seems unlikely that the political class and others are, because they added a range of electric vehicles, Chinese electric vehicles, to the list of vehicles that Australian politicians can get access to as part of their salary package. So I suspect by sticking to some firmly worded advice, our domestic intelligence agencies are falling behind the reality of the way Australians are using these vehicles.
And Alistair, you know, above and beyond the surveillance threat, there is actually concern that these vehicles could be used as a weapon. Sounds far-fetched, but is it?
Well, it does sound far-fetched, so let me break it into two parts. We need to think about capability and intent. Mm-hmm. Look, if my app on a telephone can turn my car on and off, then the manufacturer can turn the car on and off. So that's the capability bit. The question is, does China, in this instance, have the intent of doing something as destructive as turning off vehicles? It may not sound very destructive to turn a vehicle off, but if it was peak hour and you turned off a range of vehicles in any city in Australia, you'd cause chaos. You know, is there an ability to degrade the safety features on the vehicle? Could you tamper with, or not even tamper, change the battery management software on the vehicle such that when it finishes charging, you don't send a signal to the charger to stop charging the vehicle and you actually have it cause a lithium-ion fire? Is that possible? Well, I think most people would agree, yes, the capability is there. The real question is, what's the intent of the Chinese government? And I think any rational person on a normal bright blue sunny day in the winter in Australia would say it's very unlikely that China would do this type of thing, but could they? Might they at some future time? The answer has to be yes, there's a potential for it.
All right. Well, Alistair, at this stage, of course, we are not moving to ban Chinese EVs like the Americans have, but we have taken steps like this before. We did ban the Chinese company Huawei from the rollout of 5G, so it is not unprecedented, is it? But are we too late to the party at this point?
Well, we were the first country in the world to do that, and that was 2018. It was the last decision of the Turnbull cabinet. The Chinese government, of course, didn't react overly well to it. And we could imagine that if Australia ever took any steps in relation to electric vehicles coming from China, we'd find that they weren't always the most pleasant government to deal with. And I don't think the Australian government will head in that direction. But there are things that should be done. Things like, should Australia be demanding that any telemetry and data collected from these vehicles is kept in Australia and maintained by Australian engineers? There's nothing irrational about doing that. In fact, I think Australians would be surprised that so far that hasn't been a policy that is being demanded by the Australian government of what is a really critical piece of technology for our daily lives.
All right. Well, Alistair, you clearly don't think that Australia is taking this security threat seriously enough. But at this point, is it a matter of the benefits outweighing the risks? Because, of course, the cheap EVs, they're being taken up by Australians and, well, we're liking them.
I don't blame the average Australian to be making a household decision for a cheap and fit for purpose vehicle. And I can understand, of course, why Australian governments are in the conundrum they're in, which is I suspect they're waking up to the type of security risk and the privacy risk and the safety risk that these vehicles in aggregate present to the Australian population. But on the other hand, they're a very rational household purchasing decision. So I can understand how we got ourselves into this situation, but I'd love to see the Australian government asking some questions about what they can do to improve safety and security of Australians.
Alistair McGibbon is a cyber security expert. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Louise Milan. Audio production by Anna John. Our supervising producer is David Cohn. Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, please email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.